Hare Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskuri Chanaram Chayvanurutamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirachet Nastavreshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Utamashloke Bhaktir Bhavitinashtiki Hare Krishna Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'd like to thank everyone for giving me this opportunity to speak a little something on the glorious pastimes of Lord Krishna as beautifully described in the all-opulent, all-beautiful narration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the great gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his followers, full vision of transcendental pastimes of the Lord as manifested in Srimad Bhagavatam and beautifully delivered through the Parampara by His Migration of Prabhupada, His great, great gift to the world. Nigamag Kalpataro Garitam Phalam, the great ripening fruit of the entire Vedic literature. So, in this beautiful chapter, actually, I have to say, I feel very unworthy to be able to address such a nice assembly of very wonderful, exalted Vaishnavas. But I'm feeling very, very grateful to be with you and to be able to have this wonderful association. I'm very, very impressed by this beautiful, beautiful temple. It is like a showcase of the highest standard of Krishna consciousness. It's so nice, you know. One of the great, great success stories of our movement. My very dear son, Dharada Gopal Das, actually, he took a shelter of Radhanath Swami when he first met him in 2004 in Western Canada. And eventually, somehow Krishna arranged that he came to India, so he would come visit here very, very frequently, as many times as he could from his Sanskrit ashram in Gorda. And he would give me all these wonderful reports, how wonderful such wonderful association he was getting here, and he was feeling so inspired and so filled up with everyone's sincere enthusiasm, and he was really, really treasuring every moment, every day he could spend here. So it's been a long time coming for me that I finally made my effort to come here and gain your wonderful association. So I'd like to thank all of you. This is such a wonderful example of a very high level of Krishna consciousness. This community is a beautiful, finely tuned manifestation of Prabhupada's gifts to the world. Vaishnav Sangha, Krishna Katha, most beautiful, sublime, gorgeous deity worship. It's so captivating, so wonderful. Such devotion is there. Anyway, everything is so sublime here. So I'm feeling very indebted. Thank you. Okay, so we'll continue with today's verses. Text 8 of this 10th canto, chapter 38. Okay. Yad Architam.
Yad Architam.
Brahma Bhavadibi. Surai Shriya Chadevya Munibi Sasatvatahai Go Charanara Anucharis Charanara Anucharis Charad Vani Yadgopikanam Kucha kunku mankitam, yad architam brahma babadibi surai, itam brahma babadibi surai, shri acha devya muni bisvasad vitai, asad vitai, kocharanayan ucharais charadvane. Radvane yad gopikanam kucha kunku mankitam. Anyone? Yad Architam Brahma Bhavadi Bhisurai Shriya Sadevya Muribhi Sasadvatai Yacharanaya Sasarai Saradvane Yad Gopikanam Kucha Kumkumankitam Chitam Brahma Bhavadi Bhisurai Aradhanaya Sana Sharadvane Yad Gopikanam Kucha Kumkumankitam Yad Architam Rama Bhavadi Bhisurai Shriya Cha Devya Muni Bhisasadvatai Ucharanaya sasare charadvane Yad gopikanam kucha kumkumankitam Anyone else? Or Matajis? Anyone? Okay. Yat. In which lotus feet? Architam. What would that mean? Worship. Yes, worship. Nice. Worshipped. Brahma Bhava. By Brahma and Shiva. Adibi. And other. Surai. Who? Demigods, yes. Shriya. By Shri. Probably the goddess of fortune. I know we shall see. Cha. Also. Devya. The goddess of fortune. Munibi. Sages, yes. Sasadvatai. Along with the devotees. Go. Cows, yes. Charanaya. For tending. Anucharai. Together with his companions. Charat. Moving about. Vani. Yes, in the forest. Just we were chanting in the Jairada Marava, Kunja Bihari, etc. Yat. Which? Gopikanam. That means the very young carrier girls, yes. Gopi or Gopika means the youngest of the carrier girls. Kucha, from the breasts. Kunkum, by the red kunkum powder. Ankitam, marked. Translation, those lotus feet, Akura is meditating on Krishna. He's getting himself ready, you know, to meet the Lord at last, and he's so eager and he's so excited about it, you know. So he's thinking of all the beautiful features of the Lord. He's meditating in that wonderful way. So here are the thoughts of Akura. Those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas. Upon those lotus feet, the Lord walks about the forest while herding the cows with his companions. And those feet are smeared with the kumkum from the gopis' breasts. So I'll read the next. There's no purport to this verse, and I'll continue with the next verse, and then there's a small purport. Draksyami nanam chukakapola nasikam smita balo karuna kanjalokanam mukam mukam dasya gundalaksh kavritam pradakshinam me pracharanti vai mriga. Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. That face, framed by his curly hair. There's a name of Krishna describing him with the curly hair. What is that? Hey? Yes, also Lord Keshava. He who has the beautiful curly hair. It's very nice. Very personal. All of Krishna's names are so personal and specific. So that face, framed by his curly hair, is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. Such a nice description. Such a nice meditation of Akura. So appropriate by Srila Prabhupada. Akura saw an auspicious omen, the passing of the deer on his right, and thus he felt sure he would see the Supreme Lord Krishna. So it's a nice little detail, eh? Akura is very observant, and he's thinking of Krishna, and then he notices there's a nice deer coming. And it seems to be a small detail, not so important. But there's always a lot of significance in all these nice descriptions, eh? That Krishna enjoys the association of his devotees who take on so many beautiful forms. When Krishna descends in this world, he descends with all of his entourage, his paraphernalia. Prabhupada sometimes describes it as a transcendental roadshow. Like Krishna brought the whole of Goloka Vrindavan with him, at least the main associates. Of course, there are innumerable living entities in that supreme abode of the Lord. But those parishads, the inner circle of Krishna's lila, they came with Krishna. Yeah? Why? Because that is the essence of God's nature that he wants to enjoy with those dear to him. That's the essence of God. There's a nice story, actually, that once Srila Prabhupada, he was going through this, either a temple or someplace, and there was a nice large painting of Krishna. And he stopped in front of it, he was looking, then the devotees were wondering, a few of Prabhupada's disciples were with him, and they were saying, "Oh, Prabhupada, very nice painting of Krishna." And Prabhupada was looking, he says, "No, that is not Krishna." And the devotees, "But Prabhupada, Krishna is there." Prabhupada said, "No, Krishna is never alone. Because that painting showed only Krishna standing there without anyone or anything around him." And Prabhupada said, "No, that is not Krishna. Because Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always enjoying with his wonderful associates." And that is the essence of God's nature. That was nicely described by Lord Chaitanya when he went to Benares and converted. Well, actually, the whole of Benares got swept in to the waves of the Prema Niketanam, the whole ocean of love of God. It was wherever Lord Chaitanya went, he brought it with him. So he flooded the whole of India wherever he went. And he entered into Benares, which is the headquarters of the Mayavadi, the followers of Shankaracharya, very proud and scholarly like that. So he entered into Benares and he simply performed Harinam Sankirtan. And he flooded the entire Benares with the flood of love of Godhead. And the whole of Benares became filled with spiritual love and spiritual ecstasy. He just swept everyone along into that. And finally, it came to the attention of the great leader of that community, Prakasananda, Saraswati, very, very elevated or learned Mayavad leader. And he invited Lord Chaitanya to come. And Lord Chaitanya, he was manifesting different features, but he showed his extreme humility when he finally, at first he was not so sure, but of course he wanted to go and convert and give his mercy to Prakasananda and all of his followers. But he finally arrived near the assembly hall where all these great, austere sannyasis were. And he stood there where they were leaving their shoes, eh? He stood there. But he had this divine light, this his divine duty, his divine effulgence coming from him. And it was flooding the whole area. It was just beautiful. And Everyone became quite amazed. Oh, what is this person that he's got? So much light is coming from him. But finally, he was able to have a discussion with Prabhasananda Saraswati, where he demonstrated that the philosophy of Shankaracharya was very incomplete, because it was like Kevalya. Everything is one, and Nirguna Brahman, that the supreme truth is this formless Brahman that has no qualities, Nirguna, no variety, no qualities, therefore it is indescribable. It's beyond words, it's beyond our conception, like that. And Lord Chaitanya says that is not the full understanding. Because Brahman is saguna. It is full of all transcendental variegatedness. So much variety. Because that is God's nature. He enjoys through variety. He has innumerable energies. Parasa shaktir vividesha shriyati. Everything is coming from him in order for him to display his different potencies and enjoy that. That variety of energy. That Krishna is essential nature. Therefore, Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always surrounded by his devotees. And in fact, though he is the Shaktiman, he is the source of everything and of everyone, he would rather be on the equal or inferior level of his devotees. He wants to enjoy rasa. And Krishna's name is Rasa Bihari, or Rasa Raj. Anyway, Rasa Bihari, he who enjoys unlimited varieties of flavors of love. You know? And so he allows his devotee to be very close and intimate in order to exchange that beautiful, intimate, divine, loving exchange. Yeah? And that was unknown. Even in the Vedas, it is hinted, but very briefly, only here and there. And that full rasa tattva, those full truths about the varieties of divine love, prema vilas, of God's loving pastimes in the spiritual world, was revealed through Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He empowered his followers to give that highest revelation, that full description of God's personhood, that God is the Supreme Person, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Sachitananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam, that he is the original and the source, but he is full of rasa, of varieties of love. And he especially empowered his most intimate follower, Srila Rupa Goswami, he instructed him personally in Prayag. When Rupa had been traveling all around India searching after Lord Chaitanya, and finally they met in this wonderful, glorious meeting in Prayag or Allahabad at the confluence of the Triveni. And from a distance, Rupa Goswami was able to see Lord Chaitanya leading his beautiful Harinam, surrounded by thousands of ecstatic chanters. And from a distance, Rupa Goswami finally had the darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his most glorious feature, glorifying the holy name. And he fell like a danda, boom, in front or at the sight of Lord Chaitanya. And from the core of his heart, he recited this beautiful prayer. Namo Mahabandhanaya, Krishna Prema Pridayati, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namni Goratisve Namaha. Such a perfect, beautiful description of Lord Chaitanya as the most magnanimous of all incarnations, because he was giving to everyone without any material qualification, any previous pious activity. He was giving them access to the highest divine love of God, which is inconceivably great. And such a, it's called Odaria. The Lord Chaitanya came with simply the mood of Radharani to give Krishna to everyone. And he was able to do that and enter into the heart of everyone and grab their affection and arouse their attraction for Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya finally, after meeting with Rupa Goswami, he instructed them into the deep, somewhat esoteric truths of prema, of divine love, and all of its varieties and intricacies, rasa tattva. And Rupa Goswami gave that same revelation in his glorious books, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Upadeshamrita and Ujjvala Nilamani, and there's a few other literatures, which are, at least Srila Prabhupada has given us that most important of literatures, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is so amazing and glorious, you know. It describes the different processes of devotional service and the different manifestations of the awakening of one's dormant relationship with Krishna, you know, in different stages, and finally goes into the details of all the ecstatic symptoms and all sorts of beautiful loving exchanges with Krishna. It's so glorious. And Prabhupada called that book the law book of ISKCON, but it's simply full of nectar. And that's the business of the devotees, is to seek that nectar and to share that nectar. And that brings me to Prabhupada's own mission, or how he was so successful, because as a pure lover of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada was, he had that burning desire coming down from his guru. He always gave all credit to his guru. Oh, my guru has made everything happen. I'm simply trying to follow him somehow or other. But these are great, eternal, perfect beings coming down from Lord Chaitanya's inner circle, coming to this world to do Lord Chaitanya's work of saving the world, saving all us, all the souls rebellious against Krishna, you know, who've forgotten everything about their real identity and like that, lost in the ways of illusion. But Lord Chaitanya sent his greatest and most loving servants to do his work and bring us back to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he got that burning desire from his guru to go and give, or try the impossible, to give Krishna to the whole world, even to those who didn't want anything to do with it. And Prabhupada was so successful because he was a lover of God, a lover of Krishna. And he would try anything. He was ready for any difficulty or austerity because he trusted in Krishna. He knew, well, Krishna will take care. If I have some success, it is all his mercy. If I don't have success, that's also his mercy. Whatever he wants, I will do his, you know, his will. And that's a really beautifully expressed in Prabhupada's poem there in the Markana Bhagavat. You know, like he wrote on the Jaladuta as he was sitting in the harbor, Boston Harbor, right? And that poem Prabhupada never actually shared with us until Prabhupada left, and it was discovered in his diary, I believe. Because we never knew of it when Prabhupada was with us. And shortly after his departure, then it was revealed to us. This amazing poetry of total surrender to Krishna's will, and Prabhupada stating, you know, you brought me here to this place, and these persons or these souls are so lost and they're so covered. It is your desire to save them, but I feel very incapable and unworthy of trying that. But if you want, let your will be done. Like, you may use me if you want, as you wish. And he said this beautiful phrase. He said, you're my master, and under your perfect guidance, let me dance, let me dance. You know, let me dance under your perfect control. And that was Prabhupada's perfection, that he was so surrendered to Krishna's mission and Krishna's desire that Krishna worked through him. He worked miracles upon miracles. And it was seen that Prabhupada was able to give that same urgent desire to help everyone to his own followers. He was an ocean of compassion. But he was able to transform those who came in contact with him to also become very compassionate and very saintly persons. It's amazing. I mean, basically, most of us, if not all of us, we were very unqualified to become Prabhupada's disciples. And, you know, but somehow or other, we were blessed with some attraction, some appreciation, some eagerness to hear from Prabhupada. And then everything else was done. As soon as we were able to hear the truth coming from Prabhupada's perfect realizations, his Krishna Shakti, eh? Krishna Shakti Vinana Hita Pravartana, he says that unless one is empowered by Krishna, he cannot give Krishna to others. That divine force comes and incarnates. Krishna incarnates in the heart and on the lips of his pure devotees. And that sound is Shabda Brahman. It is God in sound. He is there in his holy name, and he's there on the lips of his pure devotees. And that becomes manifest in this world as Shastra. Shastra is the empowered utterances of Krishna's perfect servants. Brahma, Vyasadev, coming down to the parampara, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami. These are all spokesmen of God. God speaks through them. Therefore, everything they have given to the world, that is Shastra. And it is still going on. The empowerment that Krishna gives to his devotees didn't stop with Srila Prabhupada. He empowered others to do the same. And on different degrees. Prabhupada's empowerment is unique, as was his own guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So that brings me back to the point that our only qualification was that we were somehow blessed to be able to hear Prabhupada. And that created a huge revolution in our whole existence. Our whole mindset totally changed, that we were wasting our lives in these useless stuff, sense gratification, whatever. And we sort of lost those interests, and we became interested in what Prabhupada was into, that is, giving Krishna to the whole world. And that huge transformation, it was like miraculous the way it happened, and quite quickly also. And that was our only qualification, that we were able to hear Prabhupada and take it somewhat seriously. It had the effect because we were eager to hear that perfect message, and it had perfect effect on us. There's a nice story, actually, that once Srila Prabhupada, he was actually with one of his godbrothers. It could have been Mayapur. And this is after many years of, when Prabhupada returned to India, end of 1970, early 71, with his 51st group of Western disciples. He made a sensation wherever he went. The first time in history that Westerners had become Vaishnavas, eh? And it was like miraculous and never before seen. So it was quite a sensation where Prabhupada came. And he was actually known as the guru of the hippies. Yeah, it's true. And we were like lost souls, hippies, whatever. But Prabhupada made it into Vaishnavas. And so, but we were still tainted. We were sincere and trying our best to follow Prabhupada's perfect teachings, giving our best efforts, but we had many residual bad qualities. In other words, not so cultured, not so refined in our nature. And so one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he was discussing with Prabhupada, and I guess he had quite a good connection to him, because he just revealed his mind to Prabhupada and said, yes, your disciples, they're very sincere, but they have no understanding of Vaishnava etiquette. They're behaving sometimes not so nice. And Prabhupada, he said, well, I can only say that can be perhaps the fact. They are lacking in Vaishnava etiquette, in that culture, but they have one good quality. So his godbrother said, yes. So what is? What is that? Prabhupada said, whatever I say, they will always do. They follow every word. Whatever I instruct them, they're ready to do that. And that is their one great quality. Whatever else, it's not important. So we're not so refined and not so cultured, and we don't really know about Vaishnava etiquette. Well, that has evolved. That is much improved, fortunately. But the most important thing if you take the words of your guru seriously. And Prabhupada said about himself that my only qualification was that I took to heart every word of my guru. And once he told some of his followers during a morning walk, he says, because I was so eager to hear my Guru Maharaj, every time I could, I was always trying to hear from him. So because I took it so seriously and I was so eager, you know, for hearing, now I'm very eager to share the same message, to preach everywhere around the world. And then he told his disciples, you also become like that. Eager to hear. And it was a very famous statement, of Bhaktisiddhanta, that he said that, Abhay Charan, he's very nice. I've marked him. He likes to hear. And there was a famous episode where Bhaktisiddhanta went with hundreds, if not thousands, of his disciples on a big pilgrimage around the greater Braj Mandal. And they were at Koshi. And there was a camp there, and they settled. And the announcement was made that this, tomorrow we are going to a very famous temple, and, you know, a very historical famous temple. And so the majority of his disciples went off to visit that famous temple. But Prabhupada was one of the few that stayed front row center, like right there in front of his guru, to hear every word. And Bhaktisiddhanta noticed that. The eagerness to hear, which means the eagerness to follow, to take it seriously, and to apply that. And so, that's Prabhupada. He claimed at the end of his life, one of his godbrothers came and said, oh, you have done... Finally, there was acknowledgement, reciprocation from some of his friendly godbrothers. Oh, you have done the impossible. You have done miracles. You have spread Harinam all around the world. It was so glorious. And Prabhupada was like 1 month before he actually departed. He was lying, you know, like half paralyzed. But Prabhupada said, no, I have no real credit. It is Guru Maharaj, or, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta, who has done through me. But I'm proud to say that whatever he said, I followed blindly. So Prabhupada took that as his only qualification, that he would blindly follow his guru. And he told us many times like that. He said, I have unlimited trust in my guru. I am following him blindly. He told me, if you get money, print books. Therefore, I'm asking all of you, you print books, you print books, you print books. And now look, it's so nice here, eh? Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, 45 different editions, all around the world. That is the result of perfect Guru Nishtha. That because Srila Prabhupada had so much faith in his guru, he became so empowered to spread the message of Lord Krishna all around the world through his own followers. He empowered everyone. And the empowerment is still going on. It's not just our generation of Prabhupada disciples. The empowerment is going on because that is Krishna's desire. He wants to empower as many of his devotees. You know, that's what gives Krishna the greatest satisfaction and pleasure. He wants to work through his servants, through his devotees. You know, and that was Prabhupada's also greatness, that he saw us. We're very unworthy, uncultured, very fallen. But he saw us as very, very nice devotees. And he treated us with, you know, with the greatest love and care as Krishna's special family members. You know? That's how Prabhupada saw us. That's how Prabhupada saw the whole world, actually. Not just his own disciples. That's the vision of a perfect soul. A lover of God. He sees everyone else as a part of God. You know? He wants to give that connection to everyone. You know? We've thrown away that connection. We think we can be happy without God, without Krishna. But the pure devotee, they bring us out of that illusion. come back. You belong to Krishna. You can be with Krishna again. Like that. So Prabhupada was very eager to reciprocate with those who came and took shelter of him, you know. And he gave so much mercy, so much shelter. And he's still doing that. That shelter is available. It's called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. And now growing, like, wow, expanding. It's so glorious to see that, you know, 600 temples and centers around the world. And things are manifesting so gloriously here in India. And I'm so impressed by this jewel of a temple. It is such a showcase. It's a perfect manifestation of the highest level of Krishna consciousness. It's so glorious here. And you're so fortunate and you're very sincere to represent Prabhupada like that. You know? Prabhupada is so present here. You can experience that, you know, that he is giving shelter to the whole world, and this is one beautiful arena, place, where Bombay is taking shelter. The cream of Bombay, the best souls of Bombay can come here and bathe in the beauty of Lord Krishna and the glory of his love and the beauty and love of his perfect servants, his pure devotees like Prabhupada, and all the other saints that Prabhupada has given to the world. So many. So many. I myself, I've remained in ISKCON. I was a little bit on the outskirts of ISKCON when my children were growing up. But anyway, my son actually brought me back. And but my life has been very exciting. I'm a happy nobody in the sense I never wanted to make a big wave or a big. But I think I've had the most beautiful and blessed life because I was able to be a witness to this great miracle. Just one of so many witnesses to the miracle of the spreading of the Sankirtan movement around the world. Through the empowered teachings and efforts of such a great, 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 inconceivable personality, Srila Prabhupada. You know. And that demonstration of God's love for the world, that he sends these great souls, that has made all of your lives so significant and fulfilling and exciting. Because there's so much rewarding and satisfying things happening in all our lives, you know. And so Prabhupada trained us to become like bees, you know, to always see the good and look and search out the nectar. And lose our lower nature of being like the fly, trying to see what's not so good. All the faults and all the, you know, shortcomings and the bad things, and that is material. We have to leave that at the door, as they say. You know, there's no room for that in Krishna consciousness. We have to become like bees and see the wonderful, sincere qualities in every soul because of their connection to Krishna, their connection to Guru and Krishna, and we can appreciate so many wonderful souls, and that's Krishna's blessing. Krishna's blessing takes the form of the Sangha, of the associates of, you know, that he gives to us. You know. If we are very sincere, Krishna gives us sincere association. So we can increase our sincerity. And we increase our enthusiasm and increase our taste and our enjoyment. We're supposed to be happy in Krishna conscious. And that is not a lone enterprise. It's like we can't do it on our own, alone. It is a collective achievement to become fulfilled, productive, happy in Krishna consciousness. It is a group achievement. You can, even with two, it's the beginning of a group, and you know, it increases. It's called spiritual synergy, where the good nature, the sincerity of one person is combined with the other devotee, 1 plus 1 doesn't equal 2. It becomes 4 and 8 and 12. And if you add a third person, it becomes 20. Because it's spiritual mathematics. It's greater than the limitations of this world. You know? In material affairs, 1 plus 1 only equals 2. It can't go any more than that. But in spiritual things, things are so much more productive and, you know, they amplify by Krishna's mercy. So, devotees are meant to share the positive, to, you know, support each other, help each other, appreciate each other, and become transmitters of nectar. Nectar means which gives you life, which gives you spiritual enthusiasm. Yeah? And Prabhupada has given the world an army of nectar wallahs, of perfect distributors of divine nectar. The Gauravani, the most amazing, perfect, you know, revelation about God's personal nature and the process to connect with God. The immensely perfect Bhagavad Dharma, Gauravani, that is the gift that Prabhupada has received and transmitted to the world. And we are all, and that's our family business. You know, we're nectar wallahs. We're sharing the nectar. We're giving that connection to Gauravani, to everyone. Even if they only think a nice thought about devotees. Oh, he's nice. I like him. He's a nice person. That is the beginning of their devotional service, of their connection. Because that will make them favorable or to maybe appreciate and listen better to what the devotees have to share. You know? And they can only increase. You know? So we're so blessed to be able to have that connection and to bring it to anyone and everyone. Anyone and everyone. It's amazing. So my life, though it's not so significant, but it has been one of witnessing how that connection has spread in amazing ways, miraculous ways. When Prabhupada was with us, it was amazing. Things were happening all around. My God, it was so glorious. And it was still going on. And there were maybe some mistakes and some leaders that had troubles and this, but that is part of the journey. We're at war with Kali Yuga, with the forces of darkness and ignorance. So in a war, there's some even capable warriors that get cut down, but there's no loss of diminution. Krishna will make them rise again. Because the soul is eternal and devotional service connection to Krishna is eternal. There's never any loss. There may be a gap in time or whatever, but that's not so important. Prabhupada always took back any disciple. So many had gone away at times, fallen back into bad habits and this and that. Prabhupada would always take them back. And he said, what's done is done. Now you take up the process. You stay with us. You take up. Because everything that you have done, you still have it with you. And Krishna will give you the full credit and you'll pick up where you left. You'll have the desire, the enthusiasm, you know, the drive to keep going. To my knowledge, Prabhupada rejected only 2 of his thousands of disciples because they were rascals. And I'll tell you why. I don't have to name names. Devotees of my generation would know who that are. One was actually he did guru aparad. That is, he was a very intellectual person. He thought he knew so much. He had mastered Sanskrit and this, and he was always reading this and that. And after a few years, 5-6 years as a devotee, he even traveled with Prabhupada for a whole year as one of his assistants for the books, you know. Anyway, and he finally got so puffed up with all this, the vanity of knowing so many things, that he thought, he fell prey to a great illusion, a very dangerous illusion, that Srila Prabhupada is a great, great acharya, a great saint, but he has not given us everything. I think I have to learn more esoteric, higher truths from another guru. So I will go and learn, because now I'm ready. Prabhupada has made me ready. And so I thank him. Now I can go on to the next level. Yeah? Beyond the PhD, like, you know, way up there. And he was such a fool, and Prabhupada had warned him. Prabhupada could see that. Prabhupada was all-knowing, and as much as Krishna would allow him to see, oh, this devotee is not in the right mentality, you know. He's thinking in the wrong way. Prabhupada would always correct this. In fact, Prabhupada had this superhuman ability, like an X-ray vision, you know, to understand exactly the heart of his disciples and to correct them or encourage them. He could use both sides, you know. And he was always perfect instruction. Prabhupada's letters to his disciples, it's like, you know, and the disciples were flabbergasted. How could Prabhupada know this or that? I never told him. Well, Krishna's there, and Krishna tells everything to Prabhupada. So, you know, Krishna knows, and if Krishna wants, he'll let Prabhupada know, which Prabhupada did in everything he did. He wouldn't know everything. So Prabhupada knew, and therefore he tried to correct that disciple. He told him, there's no necessity. You stay, everything is good. And you just, you know, continue. He tried to encourage him in a positive manner. And that rascal, he was such a fool. He didn't take Prabhupada's own, you know, advice. And finally the day came while he was ready to pack it up, like, and go and live in this other ashram, you know, under the guidance of the so-called more knowledgeable guru. And he had the audacity to come before Prabhupada and ask for Prabhupada's blessing. And Prabhupada knew the whole situation. Prabhupada was disgusted with him, having tried to save him, and he didn't take Prabhupada's mercy or, you know, shelter. So he went before Prabhupada and said, so I've come to ask your blessing. Prabhupada looked at him very, very sternly. He said, my blessing? My blessing is that you will no longer make advancement in this life. Very heavy, very heavy. Because there was tough love. Prabhupada wanted to slap him and wake him up. That, why are you so foolish? Why are you trying to waste your time and go to someone else? You know? But that rascal didn't follow Prabhupada. And he fell away. And that was it. Of course, he can always beg forgiveness and be admitted. You know, Prabhupada is not like, he didn't send him to hell. But he said, you're looking for advancement? In other words, simply being in Prabhupada's servant is the greatest shelter, the greatest possible advancement. There's nothing better than that, you know. You can wait a million lives before you get that opportunity to be in Prabhupada's shelter. So, and you're going to put that aside and try to find something else? Such foolishness. Anyway. And the other... example was a incorrigible speculator. That one of our regulative principles is not no cheating, no gambling, and no speculation, because it's a dangerous game. If you think you can have a better idea, you can put a spin, put your own spin on anything, you know. Oh, I know what that really means. Like, you know, that's what Mayavadis and also Jnanis do. They take Krishna's words and they say, oh, Krishna, he's saying this, but actually he means something else. So it's like Prabhupada would use the example in Dr. Radhakrishna's commentary to the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, man manam avabhad bhakta majeji mam namaskuru, that always think of me. And Prabhupada said, this rascal, Radhakrishna, very famous scholar, he was even the president of India in the 1950s or 60s. And he met as a commentary, when Krishna says, think of me, he actually means, think of the unmanifest beyond Krishna. In other words, Brahman. In other words, a total Mayavadi distortion, misinterpretation. And Prabhupada always said, that is the rascal Mayavadi mentality. They want to use Krishna. They speak from Bhagavad Gita, but totally opposite to what Krishna is saying or what Krishna means. So dangerous, you know, this misinterpretation. So one of Prabhupada's disciples was like that, that he would put a spin. He would, you know, oh, Prabhupada said this, but actually he means that. No, Prabhupada always spoke as it is. know. He didn't have a hidden meaning in what he's saying. And that's the beauty of Prabhupada's books. They're so clear. They're crystal clear. And they're so enlightening. And they really, you know, make us fully understand the most impossible truths. But they're very clearly understood through Prabhupada's revelation. It's so nice, you know. I was reading so many books of many yogis before I met the devotees in Prabhupada. And everything was sort of nebulous. You never quite knew what was about, you know. Okay, because they always said, well, it's all right. If it's spiritual, it has to be mystical. Difficult to understand. Way up there, you know, mystical. Prabhupada, once in one statement, Prabhupada said, there's nothing mystical in Krishna consciousness. Everything is clear. Everything is revealed. You apply yourself and you can understand everything clearly. And Krishna will give you the intelligence. Prabhupada will give us the intelligence to understand everything. It says, actually, in a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam, Mahat Seva Vimukte something, Vasudev Kataruchi, that there is a great spiritual reward in serving the great souls like Prabhupada and the Parampara and your Guru. You know, if you're connected to Prabhupada through Guru, like you're serving your Guru, it's as good as serving Prabhupada. It's the same connection. So by surrendering to Guru and serving him with heart and soul, there's a reward available. And you should go and get your reward. And what is that reward? Vasudev Kataruchi. You get a deep taste and attraction for hearing about Krishna. And an attachment to hearing about Krishna. And you want to hear more about Krishna from all the right sources. You know, from your Guru and Prabhupada and everything good. You know, and you get an appreciation and a realization and attachment for that. It is so precious. In fact, it is life's greatest treasure. There's nothing more precious than your realization, your appreciation for Krishna, coming through Guru Parampara. And Prabhupada has created so many glorious channels of that Vasudev Kataruchi, of that eagerness, that taste for Krishna. I constantly listen. Besides Prabhupada's classes, I like to hear classes from a few of my godbrothers who are some of my heroes. One of my favorites is Niranjan Swami. He has such a clear, beautiful intelligence. He has understood so nicely Prabhupada's teachings, you know. He enlightens me with his beautiful realizations, you know. He has such a beautiful analytical intelligence. He can, you know, break things down and describe in. Very nice, wonderful, very clear buddhi, very clear spiritual understanding. It's so nice. And of course, Radha Swami, he has an empowerment for Leela Katha. He is the greatest storyteller in our movement. Yeah, that's a really beautiful gift that Krishna has given him for his lifetime of service. He's become an ocean of nectar of Leela Katha, of the pastimes of Krishna, and of Krishna's great devotees. I mean, the first time I heard Radhanath Swami was, I knew of him, and I was a distant admirer of him, you know, from New Vrindavan, from the early years when I went with many devotees in 1972 to a very great historical assembly in the Janmasthami 1972, August 1972, and Prabhupada, and 600-700 Prabhupada disciples were there. Someone pointed out to me, oh, here is Radha. He's a very nice devotee. He takes care of some deities and a farm out in the other side of the forest. And a lot of austerity involved. And we were quite impressed and in admiration of his determination and his steadiness like that. You know? And we could never even have tried that. I mean, we were like, doing Sankirtan, and there was austerity in that, but, you know, doing that type of special deity worship, you know, he had totally surrendered to it, and he was totally into it, and he was a happy, dedicated soul, a beautiful example. You know, the wealth of our movement is very dedicated devotees like that. And so, there was I didn't have a chance to meet him and talk to him like that. Anyway, but through the years, I had a few infrequent encounters with him. It was all right. But in the summer of 2004, he visited Saranagati at the invitation of Mother Jamuna. And I was formerly living there back in the Vancouver temple. And when we heard, well, Radhanath Swami is coming to Saranagati, so That was like a 3-hour, 4-hour journey. We went. We spent the week there, and every day Radhanath Maharaj would share beautiful stories, especially on Narottam Das Thakur. And we had heard some of those stories, which I had read in one of our books, and it was very nice. But he had the expanded version. You know, he spoke on that beautiful, the very famous, the first Gaur Purnim festival, which it was organized, especially by Narottam Das Thakur, at Keturi Gram, and it was a very elaborate pastime. And he spoke on it for 2 days, 3 hours one day and 4 hours the next day. And he had such detail, I was like flabbergasted. Wow, how can he know that much? You know, all the intricate details. It's as if he had been sent there and and picked it all up and gave us a report, you know. Wow, how can he know all that? You know, so much information. And all the names of the deities that were installed in that festival, and the history of each deity, because the deity was, one deity was brought here and the other deity was brought there, and it was like a whole intricate history which he wove into the story, you know. So he has this amazing Shakti for telling amazing stories, and it's not imaginary, it's all authentic, perfect narrations from perfect sources, and he's got it all there, you know, in his beautiful brain, you know. Anyway, so that's the reward for giving your life to the Sankirtan movement. And I have other glorious God brothers and some God sisters. One, Vishakha. Vishakha is such a saint. I think she's been here a few times. Yeah? Such a clear intelligence. Such a good capacity for communication. When she speaks, everything is nice and clear, and she draws a whole picture. You know, she's one of the most gifted writers. She's written 100 articles in Bhakti Godhead over the last 40 years. Everything is so nice. So she is a one glorious demonstration of Prabhupada's empowerment to all of his disciples, men and women. You know, and there are many, many great souls like that. Yeah. I think I've gone beyond the time. I'm sorry. I just like to glorify my God brothers, but. Yes.
And especially your glorification of Srila Prabhupada's disciples.
Yeah.
Something I thought about while you were talking so nicely about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, how Prabhupada gave him all credit.
Yeah.
And one of the instances where Prabhupada gave him also more credit was he said on several different occasions that my Guru Maharaj, he said this in Atlanta, and he actually broke down in tears. My Guru Maharaj has sent you all.
Very nice.
To assist me.
Mm.
So I had this, I thought, question while you were talking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we all know, like you were saying, we all of us were so degraded. And we had no pious credits. I think someone once said Prabhupada made our pious credits.
Yeah.
So, I mean, can you maybe speak a little bit about how, what Prabhupada was meaning when he said, like, Bhakti Siddhanta had sent us? I mean, did Bhakti Siddhanta somehow, I don't know.
I know, it's a mysterious statement. You know, who are we that Bhakti Siddhanta would send us to Prabhupada? Prabhupada is like a spiritual giant. We're like little ants next to Prabhupada. What can an ant understand of the elephant, you know, in a sense that. But Bhakti Siddhanta, he was very, very powerful servant of Lord Chaitanya, you know, a world savior, basically. And he totally, Vaishnavism, the Gauravani or the Gaudiya Vaishnav legacy of Lord Chaitanya was all but dead before Bhaktivinoda Thakur came. There were a few saintly Babaji's on the unknown, living in the little holy places. But basically, the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition had become so degraded, so distorted, it was totally lost. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he brought it all back, and especially he trained his son. And his son went on a military campaign. He went to destroy all the Appa Sampradayas without any mercy or any... You know, okay, you're concocting, you're distorting Lord Chaitanya, you're a rascal and a fool, and you give it up, or Singa Guru, like the lion on the hunt, you know, devouring the Mayavads and the concocted Sajiyas, like that, you know, totally. And they had no leg to stand on. They would run away sometimes. It became like that. Oh, this Bhaktisiddhanta's coming. Okay, let's get out of here. Yes. He's going to really chew us up and spit us out, you know. He was very powerful like that. So he did that. And Prabhupada was very proud of that. He told us many times, he said, my Guru Maharaj, he was ready to, you know, take on anyone, including Ramakrishna and so many nonsense in any way. Everywhere he went, he was a conqueror for Krishna. And he had to do it. He had to do, like, he had to cut through the jungle of the Mayavad and the concocted Apasampradayas to get to the effulgent, pure Gauravani so that he would show, manifest it in all of its glory. So he had to cut down all the bad stuff in order for it to rise again. So Prabhupada continued that, and he brought it to the West. And Prabhupada was also a fighter, you know, like really. He didn't back down at anything. And like here, there was a famous episode where Prabhupada came and did the Pandal in Calcutta in 71 or something, and there was a group of what they would call today terrorists, that is, fanatical revolutionaries called the Naxalites. And these were armed, and they would kill some of their targets, like they were after very rich men. Because these person said, well, the only way that people can be helped is through violent revolution. You know, they claimed like communist roots and like that, Lenin and Maoist and whatever. And there was just a bunch of crazy revolutionaries. And so they sent a message to Prabhupada, you know, don't come or die. You know, they wanted to challenge because they felt, oh, religion is a opium of the people, like the communist slogan, eh? You know, and so a great religious leader like Prabhupada, they felt, oh, he's the enemy, and we're gonna get at him. So they said, you know, okay, stop or die. And Prabhupada, no problem. He went, and in fact, after a few days, some of those crazy revolutionaries showed up, and they tried to make trouble. You know, and but the devotees didn't want to mess with them. They didn't want to start any fight. They just asked him, well, you can sit here. And they asked, okay, we want to sit up front. And, you know, we can shout if we want. And they thought they would heckle, like they would shout against Prabhupada. But when they came to the front and listened to Prabhupada, they're, you know, they had nothing to say. They could recognize, here is a really genuine person. And he's a friend of the people. He really wants to help everyone. What can we say, you know? So they became very docile in front of Prabhupada. These hardcore revolutionaries, ready to kill people, all that. And in front of Prabhupada, they became like little kittens, not roaring, but very submissive. So Prabhupada's Shakti was amazing like that. And he was fearless, Abai, fearless for Krishna, time and again. And he made his disciples fearless. Really, like, you know. And so many disciples went to the far corners of the world, into Russia, and here and there, and their lives were at stake, but no, nothing will stop them. And look at what happened to the Russian devotees. They were being arrested and tortured by the state police, the KGB, and they didn't stop. You know, I've often wondered, what I have been a devotee in those circumstances, you know, like you're going to be arrested and tortured if you're found. You know, what determination, what fearlessness. Prabhupada created that divine fire, you know, in those souls, you know. Anything for Krishna. So it's so glorious. Our legacy is amazing. Right? Amazing. So thank you very much. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Radha Gopinath Mandir ki jai. Guru Parampara ki jai. Go Brahmananda Hari Go. Thank you. That's all. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada's mercy ki jai.